Market View on Money FM 89.3.
You're listening to Money FM 89.3, and we're just a few days removed from the decision by OPEC and their key allies to maintain production cuts as is. And this has given oil prices a continued boost. In fact, we're seeing that Brent crude futures are currently trading above $70 a barrel in today's session. Of course, today's price boost might also have something to do with the recent news that a key oil terminal in Saudi Arabia was subject to a drone strike and an attack, which of course rocked markets once again. Just how sensitive are markets oil markets going to be moving forward? And what are the key takeaways from the decision by OPEC Plus to curtail production for the time being? Well, today on Money FM 89.3, we're joined by Mr. Dave Ernsberger, the Global Head of Pricing and Market Insight at S&P Global Platts. He's here to share with us his thoughts and what his key takeaways are from OPEC's decision, and also what he makes of the recent events in Saudi Arabia. Dave, thank you so much for joining us today. Glad to hear you and your loved ones are still in good health and safe during these troubled times, these uncertain times, I mean. And welcome back to the show, sir. It's been a while, and good morning out to you out there in London.
Thank you, JP. It's always a pleasure to come on and talk about what's happening in the oil market, so thanks for having us.
And of course, Dave, we have to lead off with that news earlier this morning about that key export terminal, the Ras Tanura export terminal in Saudi Arabia, being subject to a drone strike that's being claimed by Houthi rebels in Yemen that are supposedly backed by the state of Iran. Saudi officials have said that output remained unaffected or was unaffected. And also, more importantly, that there was no loss of life that was incurred, thank heavens. We are seeing that there has been a significant gain in oil prices today. Can you explain to our listeners just how sensitive crude oil markets are when it comes to some of these geopolitical events that could affect some key producers like Saudi Arabia, for instance?
Sure, I'm happy to. And actually, the attack that we've seen in Ras Tanura reminds me a lot of what was happening at the start of 2020, so a little bit more than a year ago. Many of your listeners will probably remember the assassination of Qasem Soleimani in Iran by the Trump administration, and what a roiling effect that had on the oil markets in January of 2020. This attack on Ras Tanura, which is, of course, a completely different situation, except it's a significant military event in the Middle East, which is the real parallel there, really reminds us now, as the Soleimani attack did in 2020, that at the heart of the oil markets is always a sort of precarious instability around the geopolitical relations that tie together all of the different producers of crude oil, the major producers of crude oil, including the United States, by the way. All of these countries are involved in very complicated, very inherently unstable and unpredictable networks of relationships with each other. And this is a reminder of the Ras Tanura attack that the oil markets are always looking over their shoulder at the different kinds of surprise events that can happen. And I think because of the network of relationships at the heart of oil, these events are more likely to happen in oil than almost any other commodity market in the world. Now, the other point about the Ras Tanura attack is that it also puts a spotlight on how vulnerable the oil markets are to some kind of key failure points, I would say, where supply is highly concentrated, export facilities can be highly concentrated. At the end of the day, four or five countries account for the lion's share of the oil production out there, and these can have outsized impacts. We saw the Texas freeze, which actually put a lot of U.S. oil infrastructure under the cosh about 2 or 3 weeks ago now. Now we see this putting Saudi infrastructure to the test. So again, we're reminded about these highly centralized weakness points in the chain as well.
I mean, these geopolitical attacks, they tend to have a knee-jerk reaction on markets for the most part. Do you think that the sudden jump, we might see oil prices perhaps ease off a little bit once more information is out there, once more nerves are soothed?
Yeah, today's jump over $70 takes us even further beyond where, in Platts, we think that the natural equilibrium point is for oil prices this year. We're well over our skis at this point at where we think the value for crude oil will generally be around this year, which is closer to 65 or even slightly less through the rest of this year. So we're a little bit over that at the moment, and that is in reaction to these attacks and this instability. And it does also underline the way that the market's been prepped by the outcome of the OPEC meeting last week. So, you know, there was a surprise rollover of the production cuts by the OPEC Plus, and that's created an expectation of continued tightness in the market on a near-term basis. And so the effect of a supply-oriented attack like this is sort of oversized compared to what it would have been without that OPEC rollover.
Now, Dave, we have to talk about the recent decision by OPEC and friends to keep production cuts as is. The thing is, though, Dave, in the past, we've talked about recent meetings between OPEC and friends not being as friendly as hoped for. A lot of these agreements we've discussed in the past also have been forged on the back of persistent squabbling between some members and their key allies, or even some infighting within OPEC itself. This time around, though, it seems as though these members were able to agree to keeping supply cuts as is, and, you know, that the discussions went rather smoothly. Did the seeming harmony between OPEC and some of their allies surprise you this time around?
Yeah, the Zoom calls that are the OPEC Plus meetings are like anybody's Zoom calls at the end of the day. I think they're probably more stressful than people hope for, and not as efficient as expected by and large. And I think, you know, you mentioned the relative mood music around this most recent OPEC Plus meeting was better than it has been over the course of the sort of the end of 2020 and the beginning of 2021. I think there are a couple of reasons for that. You know, they're holding these on a monthly cadence for the moment. There's another one coming up on April the 1st. So, you know, but by the time one is over, another one is just around the corner. And that allows some of the tougher decisions to be, you know, kicked down the road or deferred in the knowledge that it won't be long before they come back and try and chew over them again. But also there's been a lot of pre-conference prepping going on. So a lot of bilateral meetings between Saudi Arabia and Russia, for example. So the key tension points when the full group assembles have been either, you know, ironed out in advance through bilateral discussions, or there's a sense of permission to kick it down the road to the next meeting 4 weeks later. And I think that's just taking the edge off these Zoom calls. Which is good advice for us all, JP, as we think about our own Zoom calls. Maybe we should all be trying a little bit of that. It's been very successful here.
The thing, too, Dave, is that Saudi Arabia has warned that members should remain rather cautious despite the improving landscape for oil prices. However, has demand picked up enough to indicate that we can afford to be a little bit more optimistic moving forward with regards to the state of oil markets and this sustained gains that we're seeing for crude oil futures?
You know, it's a long, hard road back for these markets from the global pandemic, and the uneven rollout of vaccinations is the current focus of caution, I would say, as we were talking about before the interview today, JP. Some countries in the UK are appearing to fare reasonably well, other countries less so, and then there are many countries where a vaccine won't be ubiquitous for maybe years to come. So it's a long road back for these markets, and it's kind of very connected to the successful vaccination of people, the resumption of economic activity. You know, our expectation at Platts is that global oil demand will only get back to 2019's levels in 2022, so not until next year at this point. And there are some parts of the market, like, let's say, jet fuel and aviation, where demand won't get back to 2019's levels until much, much later than that, maybe 2024 or 2025. So, you know, the caution that the Saudi delegation speaks about is right. There will be critics who would argue that that OPEC Plus could do a little bit more to help with the economic recovery by perhaps allowing oil prices to ease off a little bit. But that isn't what the Saudis mean when they talk about caution with OPEC Plus. What they're talking about is the risk, of course, that the market could actually completely fragment and collapse again. So, you know, they're trying to thread a difficult needle at this point. But first and foremost is the desire to refill the coffers of the OPEC Plus membership. And the best way to do that is probably to achieve more return on 28 million barrels of production at a higher oil price than to maybe allow the market to go back to closer to 30 and risk a halving of the price. You have to remember, oil prices are up 80% since November. So they're quite pleased with where they've gotten to so far.
of course, with oil prices starting to rise, and again, it's been a while since we've seen Brent crude above $70 a barrel right now. The big fear in the past, whenever OPEC and friends would meet, was that the shale oil drillers on the other side of the Atlantic in the United States would head back to their rigs, open the spigots, and also start drilling once again on the site of potentially better margins moving forward. But this time around, Dave, it seems that OPEC doesn't seem as spooked about big, bad shale oil. What's changed for the shale oil drillers over in the U.S. that makes them seem like less of a threat or a perceived threat from the folks over at OPEC?
Yeah, I think that there's a window going on here where there's pressure on domestic U.S. oil producers to be more disciplined and to focus more on cash flow, to focus more on running more sustainable, financially sustainable, especially business operations. So we just haven't seen U.S. drillers rushing in the way that they have done with previous price recoveries to bring that production back to market. And that's at least in part because they have a watchful eye on the demands of their financiers and those who are otherwise continuing to extend loans and debt relief, that they will, you know, bring their production back in a financially sustainable way. And so there's more of a mindful eye on capital discipline, which just hasn't been the feature of oil production in the U.S. for about a decade now. It's usually been produced first and worry about paying the debts afterwards. Now, the other part of this as well, though, is more kind of, I would say, geological. It's for the rigs that are currently out in the field and the rigs that are able to produce liquids in response to higher prices, because of the extensive mothballing that happened in 2020, where rigs weren't just scaled back, a lot of them were put completely on ice. It'll take more like 3 to 9 months for the rigs to get back to the field, to get set up again to produce. So there's a longer lead time as well to bring that U.S. oil production back to market once producers decide that the time is right to go out there and try and realize that production. So they're being more cautious to come back. They want to bring production back in a more sustained way when they do. And it's going to take maybe on average about 3 to 4 months longer than usual to get that production up and running. And that's why you see when OPEC works out its game theory, they see a window between now and the summer where actually it's a clear runway for them to basically call all the shots on production here.
Dave, this goes back to you with the point you made about jet fuel. The folks over at Vitol actually pointed out, and they've pointed out on a handful of occasions in the last few months, that it's going to take a pickup in jet fuel demand to really be a key catalyst in determining whether or not oil can return to their pre-pandemic levels. Do you agree with these sentiments? And just how precarious is that outlook if oil ultimately will depend on planes taking off once again and carrying folks from, say, here to London or from Dubai back to, say, Denver?
Yeah, so jet fuel, when you put crude oil through a refinery, the value of that oil and the value of a barrel of crude oil is really only equivalent broadly to the value of the products that you can make from it, like your gasoline, diesel, petrochemicals at the end of the day, fuel for ships, and fuel for planes. You know, jet fuel is one of the key outputs at about 6 to 7% of what the global refinery base might be putting out into the market. So ultimately, I mean, look, Vitol has an important point here, and other people who talk about the economics of aviation and jet fuel. If the 6 to 7% of the barrel that goes into the jet fuel pool, if that has negative value, then that is going to hold back the inherent value of crude oil itself. But, you know, at 6 to 7% of the outturn of crude oil, I would argue it's not quite enough to hold oil back. And that's really what we're seeing here. So I think how I would characterize this, JP, is when we all start traveling again for different reasons, personal, professional, and otherwise, there could be a pop in oil prices that we might see because, you know, jet fuel is holding the value of a barrel of oil back quite significantly right now, not enough to hold it back again to 70, as we've all seen today. But imagine that part of the barrel suddenly springs back to life again. We could be in store for more of a pop than anything else. And that's how I would look at it.
We're still speaking to Mr. Dave Ernstberger, the Global Head of Pricing and Market Insight at S&P Global Platts here in Money FM 89.3 to talk about the state of crude oil markets after the recent meeting between OPEC Plus and their decision to keep supply cuts as is for the time being. But we have to look ahead, Dave. And April's meeting may be the kicker and see OPEC Plus push for about 1.3 million barrels of oil to be reintroduced into the markets. The concern, though, is whether or not they might be turning the spigots on or reopening the taps a little too early. Will crude oil markets be able to absorb this, or could we run the risk of overflooding markets and also have a repeat of those negative prices that we saw about 10 months ago?
Yeah, there are probably two big risks to the downside for the market right now. And one of them is OPEC production coming back in the April meeting. And of course, the production would fall off not much later. And the other downside risk is that we do anticipate that there's a strong possibility of some sort of resumption of the Iran nuclear deal, which maybe before the end of the year could create the pathway for another million barrels a day of Iranian supply to come back to market as well. So you could conceivably see the voluntary Saudi cuts being put back into the market, OPEC in general easing up, more Russia supply coming in, and also these Iranian barrels coming back too. And so all told, that's pushing towards 3 million barrels a day or more of production coming back into the market of the 8 million barrels a day that are being held off right now. So that's a significant downside risk. And I think what I would say to that, for folks who are trying to weigh up the impact of that on the markets, is look at what OPEC is looking at. At the end of the day, when OPEC gets together on a monthly basis, the analysis begins and ends with inventories. What is going on with the stockpiles of crude oil right now? And the answer to the question, could we see negative pricing later this year like we saw in 2020, ultimately for me lies in the inventories and the stockpiles of crude oil. The clear driver of negative pricing last year was there was literally nowhere to put the barrels. Well, I shouldn't say literally. If you looked hard enough, you could have found it. There was capacity, as it turned out, in various parts of the chain. But that capacity had been squeezed so tight by existing glut of storage that there wasn't anywhere perceived to be available to put the oil when it was being produced. I don't think that'll be the case in the end of 2021. OPEC will not release oil into the market if there isn't storage capable of taking it. And storage is certainly lower than it was last year. So we may see weaker prices, but it seems unlikely we'll see a dash for negative pricing as a result of all that.
Finally, Dave, just how much longer can producers hold out on production at these levels, given that a sizable chunk of some of their state revenues still depend on oil at certain output levels? Now, prices might be up, but if you have to constrain production moving forward, won't it mean little to states that might be struggling to keep the coffers from depleting? How much longer can they actually sustain some of these supply cuts moving forward?
Yeah, what you're really talking about there, JP, is what tends to be called by the market discipline. So how long can discipline be maintained by OPEC and the OPEC Plus group of countries? Now, the reality is that almost all of those countries are producing all the oil they possibly can as it stands today.
Right.
So the discipline of the OPEC group hasn't been fantastic. It has been a highlight, though, of the market. There's been more discipline from OPEC Plus than commentators like us would have expected there to be, right? Iraq is producing significantly more than it's been allowed to produce. I'm saying with air quotes, there's more Iranian oil in the market than folks expect there to be in general. So I would say, the relationships are uneasy. There's a lot of tension at the heart of all of this. Discipline has been better than expected, but it hasn't been perfect. And I think we're just going to see that continue for the rest of the year. We'll probably see countries, with the exception of the United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, and Russia, those are the big four here that do voluntarily reduce their production from time to time. I think the rest of OPEC Plus is there. To sort of give the group heft. But generally speaking, they are going to react to the kinds of economic signals you're talking about. As they need to produce oil, as they're able to produce oil, they will push the boundaries. And that discipline will come down to the big four countries at the heart of it. And really how long they can stay committed to the vision is the big question here. And we've already seen Russia being given license to increase production a little bit. Saudi Arabia has indicated it will ease some of its million barrels a day back in the market from April. So there will be discipline there, but not as much as we've seen in Q1 of this year. And that's going to set the scene for things to unwind just a little bit, not catastrophically, but just a little bit in Q2 and Q3 around production cuts.
All right, Mr. Dave Ernsberger, Global Head of Pricing and Market Insight at S&P Global Platts. We thank you so much for taking some time out of your schedule and your morning to join us today on Money FM 89.3 to talk about the aftermath of OPEC and friends' decision to keep supply production cuts as is and what the state of oil markets are looking like moving deeper into 2021. As always, I wish you and your loved ones continued health and safety during these times, and we look forward to the next time you can join us. Good morning and cheers.
Thanks, JP. I look forward to it. Stay well.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg.
or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.